Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
T-Mobile is more than the best network in the game. They're now the best network in America, according to the experts at Ookla Speedtest. So baseball fans are connected to the Fall Classic from home to home plate with the most advanced 5G, more towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever before. T-Mobile has you covered. For baseball fans, it's better over here.
Best mobile network based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence data, first half 2025. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Hello.
Hi.
Howdy, what's up, dude? How's it going?
Good, how are you?
Not bad.
Good.
Not bad at all.
Our producer earlier, she said, hey, can you send me his name and credentials and his title? And I said, oh, boy. I said, well, his name's Thomas, and, when I think of his title, he's real good at playing drums and guitar, and he's a big, big shot Harvard grad. That's what I would put on his description. Big time Harvard grad. Is that
perfect?
Is that good? I mean, I don't know. I think he's a lawyer, but then actually, I don't know if he's allowed to practice law here, and I don't know how that works. I know he sues like presidents of other countries and stuff, and is involved in lawsuits that get turned into documentaries and dramatizations and all that, but I don't know if he's like, if you can actually say that he's a lawyer here or not. I don't know. Are you a lawyer here?
I mean, I have a piece of paper that says I am, so.
Okay, then you're a lawyer.
Yeah.
As far as I know, that's all there's to it. Ladies and gentlemen, Thomas Becker, an old friend of ours. We've known Thomas a long time. Lazo, you worked with him?
A long time, right, Thomas?
Like, offensively long. We're like we're going to like out our ages. But
yeah, we don't want to do
like
that.
A couple decades, probably.
Yeah.
Well, there you went.
I mean, 2 years, and we're sparking young. Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
23, 24-year-olds.
And
My hairline's not going back or anything.
Thomas, you're from the area. Thomas grew up in Kansas City. But as I mentioned, he's a smart
one. I have a thing here. It says, Thomas is the legal and policy director and senior clinical supervisor at the University Network for Human Rights. That sounds made up.
That sounds like the human
fund. That sounds made up.
Yeah, I'd like a donation for the human fund.
Is that a thing?
Well, I mean, you know, if you ask my boss, it's a thing. I don't know if it actually means anything. But.
And who's your boss again? Liz Warren? Is that? Or was she just your teacher?
She was my teacher and colleague when I used to teach at an overrated law school up in the Northeast.
Oh,
okay.
So you taught at the law school too, and she was not just a teacher; she was a colleague. That's that's pretty impressive.
Oh,
yeah. And also, Thomas has been, you know, for people who are like, I don't know anything about smart stuff or human rights. Thomas is also a musician. Worked at a lot of bands. Done a lot in the music world.
Yeah.
So, a pretty interesting life. And the reason we wanted to call you, one, is to catch up because we haven't talked to you forever. or at least I know I haven't talked to you forever. But the other was because the last you texted me to say, hey, congratulations on your wedding. When I get back to Kansas City, let's hang out. And then you said that you were on your way to Palestine, I think is what you said at the time. And that was, and then the next thing I know, I heard that there was troubles.
There were troubles. You know, probably not the most lovely Mediterranean cruise I've ever taken. Actually, I've never taken a Mediterranean cruise, but yeah, I got in a little bit of trouble.
Yeah.
All right. So if I saw it on Instagram, and it was a picture of you, and you're like, if I don't know, you're on like some fucking pirate pontoon boat or something. I'm like, this fucking guy.
Was Greta Thunberg there or no? Was that a different ship?
She was on a different ship.
Okay.
So like,
okay.
I was on a ship of mostly journalists and medics and human rights people. She was on a different ship.
Okay.
But
okay.
It wasn't really a ship, right?
So there were like small little boats. Ours was a bigger boat. It was basically, I want to say it was like a ferry that we kind of turned into a boat that we slept on. I mean, it was very questionable whether it was going to make it all the way to Gaza. But there was a range of boats. Ours had like about 100 people. Most of the boats were smaller and had like a handful of people. It just kind of depend on, people just kind of pulled the stuff together. So like you saw people in boats that were like borderline dugout canoes. And then ours was, you know, a little bit bigger.
All right. So you're in this boat. And you're going to Gaza, and why are you in the sea going to Gaza? What, I mean, because I was in the Navy and they made me go, and I didn't like it then. I don't know why you would go now. So what's your, like, you're in this boat. What are you going to do when you get there?
Well, one, yeah, being on a boat, I can barely like drive through, you know, to Overland Park without getting motion sickness. So being on the boat kind of sucked, but.
Right.
You know, woe is me. It doesn't suck as much as being in Gaza. Look, we went there, you know, as you mentioned, I'm a human rights lawyer. I pretend to do law and pretend to do journalism and all that stuff. And there's a genocide happening in Gaza, according to every major international human rights institution on the planet, including international human rights or Israeli human rights institutions. And basically, there's been a total blackout. No journalists have been allowed in there to cover what's happening. No human rights lawyers have been allowed to go in there. And they've killed an unprecedented amount of medical workers. So my boat in particular was journalists and human rights-y people and doctors going there to do the jobs that we should be able to do during wartime. So we were going there to work, but also delivering aid. You know, we had boxes of medicines and foods and all that stuff. So, you know, this was a big flotilla of between 500 to 1,000 people. And it kind of came in waves and people were dropping off aid in what's been, you know, described by, again, every international human rights institution as an illegal siege of Gaza, an illegal blockade. So we were basically trying to break the blockade and feed starving people. Nothing pretty radical. It's not that radical. People are starving. We're trying to get them food and medical attention and see what's going on.
Now, Israel will say, or Netanyahu specifically will say, the reason for the blockade is because Hamas, they use, you know, this guise of sending in aid or bringing in food and medicine. And what they're actually doing is getting weapons, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's adorable. I mean, like...
But that is their excuse for the blockade?
Well, I mean, the blockade recently, but Gaza's been blockaded for, you know, a couple decades now. And it's basically to control this population, to not let anybody in and out. They've not let people in and out. They don't let basic, like, medical supplies, basic baby formula, stuff like this. They've kept them in what's being described as an open-air prison for decades. So it didn't just start on October 7th. But since the Gaza war started, or the Gaza genocide, frankly, you know, they've used this pretext to say, oh, no aid. These boats are Hamas boats. These are not Hamas boats. These were medical professionals. These are professors. These are journalists, professionals in the field that have absolutely no relation to Hamas. It's just propaganda talking points. And there's no, you know, there's no substance behind it. They haven't shown any proof of this. They just kind of say things, and then it's taken as word, unfortunately, by, you know, too many people, frankly.
Now, did you think taking the boat there was a safer route or route than just by land?
Yes and no. I mean, I don't think any of it's safe. I mean, they've shot people trying to go there, get in. We've seen, like, in aid lines, they shoot people. You know, it's, again, what we've seen is not like we have eyes, you know, they can frame it however they want, but like mothers standing in line to get aid and then gunning them down is pretty objectively bad. You know, I don't know if it was any safer, but it's unquestionably like more legal. They kidnapped us in international waters. I mean, we were 120 nautical miles from Gaza. These are not Israeli territories. They can't, and they just kidnapped us. So we were going through what are basically legal channels to get there, or legal avenues to get there, hoping that they, you know, they wouldn't break the law, but they did.
And what does that look like when you, because you knew that this was a risk. You'd seen what had been going on and what had happened to others who have tried to get aid into that area. I'm assuming that you're kind of looking over your shoulder. You're kind of watching the horizon the whole time to see if somebody's coming. And when you do see them coming, do you know it's them? And how do you know it's them?
Well, so we, you know, we were part of a flotilla of many boats. And so some of the smaller boats had been taken. We were on a bigger boat, so they weren't able to, like, commandeer our boat via boat. So they flew above in helicopter and basically dropped down in their equivalent of, like, the U.S. Navy SEALs, you know, with laser.
Was that the Israeli Defense Force?
Yeah, but it's
I just didn't know like if it was some sort of, you know, guys in plain clothes. You know, like the United States has, you know, I don't know, Black Rock or whatever. Is it? Was it it their military or was it somebody else?
Yeah.
No, it was their military. It was I'm blanking on the name, but it is the like the literal equivalent of like the U.S. Navy SEALs. So they have all the like Rambo looking stuff and the guns with laser scopes on them. So they dropped down from helicopters and then took us and then, you know, separated some of us. Those who were wearing like keffiyehs or, well, frankly, browner than me, those who were like Muslim, Arab, North African, they separated some of us and then just took them in the other room and beat them and then brought us into port into Israel where they imprisoned us.
They took them in the other room and just beat them? But so you're witnessing this, you're hearing this? They leave you alone because of your skin color?
I mean, I need to be clear that every single one of us, and it's hard to say this as someone who works on human rights issues and knows about torture, and I want to like, I'm hesitant to talk about my experience because I, you know, whatever they've done to Palestinians has been exponentially worse, but every single one of us was tortured in some form or another. So they put us in stress positions. So yes, initially they pulled some people aside and beat them up, but it wasn't just that I witnessed them. It happened to me. It happened to all of us over the next several days in every single facility they brought us to. So they brought us to like what would be the Guantanamo of Israel. But also when we were in holding cells, when we were in the trucks that transported us, they put us in stress positions for hours. They hit us, they kicked us, they spit on us, they rubbed my face in urine. They, you know, said, you say you love Israel, praise Israel. And again, it was a spectrum. There were like the people that were darker skinned than me or Muslim appearing, whatever they saw, or Israelis. There were Israelis with us. They tended to target substantially more. And so, yeah, I'd be, you know, they did it to me, but I would be in a stress position and they'd just be beating the elderly person next to me.
So they're not screaming questions at you like, why are you here? Why are you here? It's more of a, hey, tell us that you love Israel. Show us your loyalty. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yes and no. So, yes, that happened. And then we were interrogated as well. They wanted to know why we're here, accused us of being Hamas, et cetera. It kind of went between like interrogation just to degradation, total humiliation. And, you know, little things like all night coming in, kicking down the door, putting guns on our heads, not knowing where other people were. Like, you know, there were a couple of people that when they took us on the boat, one was wearing keffiyeh. He was a journalist from Tunisia. And if you're not familiar with the keffiyeh, it's kind of it's a scarf, the Palestinian scarf. So they pulled him aside. Someone tried to stop them because they were roughing him up. And those two disappeared for several days. And so we didn't know, were they killed? We don't know what's happening. Several people, they just put in solitary confinement. There were rumors they brought them out into the desert and killed them, and which did not happen. But they did, you know, they interrogated us, but they humiliated us for days.
And what's their end game there? Is it just to make sure you don't come back?
I think so, because, I mean, like, the optics of it, like, I ended up doing a hunger strike for a number of days because with a lot of people in my block, because they wouldn't give anybody medicine. There was an 69-year-old or 70-year-old Buddhist monk with us. I mean, like, they wouldn't give him his heart medicine. It's like the optics are, it's just like strategically, I don't even understand it other than just to keep us away. I think part of it is there were kind of two waves after Greta got taken. I think they thought, okay, it's over. But then the next wave of us came and I you know, there was kind of murmurs of like, we got to nip this in the bud because people are going to keep coming because this is an illegal blockade. So, and after people were arrested, you know, the U.S. has a really complicated relationship with Israel. I think most of the world has been quite outspoken about what's happened. And so when we were taken and the first round was taken, there were protests all over Europe with literally millions of people. Israel, which is even actually a conservative government, nonetheless shut down. There was an entire nationwide strike in response to these attacks on these flotillas, because we're literally just bringing aid to starving people, and they're kidnapping us and then torturing us. Again, not nearly as bad as they've tortured Palestinians, but torture nonetheless. So I think it was just to keep us, to stop us from going back, because it's been successful. The international community has been like, look, this is a bad look. You're beating up Buddhist monks. You're beating up elderly people. I mean, there's images of these, like, you know, there was an 80-some-year-old woman who also was sick that they just beat the crap out of her for asking for her medicine. They beat us for saying, we need lawyers. They brought us before judges, but wouldn't let us have lawyers. And when we asked, they would, you know, throw us on the ground, drag us and stuff. I mean, this is not a good look.
But I guess my bigger question is, you hear about these governments that become paranoid over time, these dictators, these autocracies, that, you know, even the United States and Russia during the Cold War, right? They become more and more paranoid. Is there any part of you that thinks that they do believe that it's possible that Hamas is somehow going to sneak by them in one of these flotillas, and that's why they stop every flotilla, why they are running this illegal blockade? I mean, what is the purpose if not that? Do we not know?
I think that this is, and I think that most Americans just don't get it. It's hard to get it till you really, you know, start digging deeper or go there and see this firsthand. This is an ethno-nationalist fanatical regime. Netanyahu is not your like run-of-the-mill leader, even kind of somewhat authoritarian. You can look at all the state. You don't even have to listen to me. Look at the statements of his leadership who has openly said, we will annihilate all Palestinians. Gaza is our land. We are the chosen people. This is our land. And so I think when you have this really problematic, racist, ethno-nationalist perspective on this, you can justify anything. So I don't think they actually think that. I just don't think they care.
It's kind of showing how tough we are. I'm a strong man, and I'm going to show that we're not gonna allow any of this shit. That sort of thing. Look how tough
I am. Just, like I said, nip it in the bud. We are a nuisance, and we're exposing what they're doing. Again, we're exposing, you know, when you're beating Buddhist monks, that's a bad look. So they're just like, we don't want any of this. Get the hell out. And we feel justified because we are the chosen people. And again, it seems so extreme to say this, but like, look at the language of the leadership. This is not, this is not an opinion. These are their words. And this is how they behave. This is not a conservative government or something. This is an extremist regime, an ethno-nationalist regime carrying out a genocide according to every major institution that works on these issues.
Let me ask you something while you're there. Do you get that? I don't know if you interacted with them, but I'm guessing you did. The population of Israel, how do they feel about it?
Yeah, you said they're protesting in their conservative country. If they're on strike like this, how are they feeling? Why is he still in power?
Well, I mean, before October 7th, there were widespread protests against Netanyahu, and there still are. I think there's a lot of critiques, in the Israeli population. I can't say, I didn't I've been to Israel before in the past. I don't think I'm going to be invited back anytime soon. But during this, my interactions with this during this period has been just exclusively with Israeli forces, the IDF and others. What I can say is that there's been big protests against Netanyahu. He's wildly unpopular. He's become more popular since the war because wars always help, autocrats. Mm-hmm. They use an other to kind of point to distract from their own corruption. I mean, there's countless corruption allegations against him. But I do think there's, you know, within Israel, a lot of criticisms of what's happening and a lot of people who've been fighting to say, get the hostages back. I mean, like Netanyahu has rejected so many hostage deals. And none of this is to like praise Hamas or say that they're great. I mean, this is the problem, is that there's like this dichotomy of like you saying don't bomb hospitals with babies in it means you're, you know, pro Hamas or anti-Semitic or all this stuff. I mean, it's kind of like, it's childish response, but so,
right, so
none
are
of this
we at that
be,
point
like,
where like you just said, you know, you're not pro Hamas. So,
no,
but when we hear
right.
Israel, when we hear Israel say stuff, they say, why are they bombing this hospital? And then Israel says, because they use the hospital as a shield for weapons or military, and they use it so that it's bad propaganda against us. It's like a third party person. To be honest, you're like, I don't know what, like, I did they land? Did Hamas go to a concert and grab people out of it? Like, that's insanity, right? But, you know, you hear both sides, and I think you're just sitting here going like, you know what? I don't know what the fuck's true.
Totally. And I got to be honest, it's a really understandable position. Like, I'm quite critical of the war crimes Israel's carrying out. But I get why a lot of Americans don't get it. So much dust is thrown up into the air. You don't know what's true or not. It's very believable that they are in some of these spaces. Except, rather than listening to Israeli officials, I choose to listen to the institutions that look into this, ranging from, you know, Oxfam to Human Rights Watch to the United Nations, who've debunked all these things. Or the doctors that are there, and not just like Palestinian doctors, international doctors from the U.S. They're saying, I've worked in this hospital for years. Hamas is not here. They said the same about us on our ships. I mean, it's just like, it's almost comedic. It's like very cartoonish. It's like so exact. It's like everything is, but Hamas is there. And it's like, really, Hamas is on this ship that, you know, we took, like, this is an American doctor next to me who's never even been to the region. How are they Hamas? And they've used it over and over and over. I spent time years ago working in Lebanon during the Lebanon-Israel war as well. And they were saying that these hospitals that I saw bombed, I saw children blown up. I mean, it was horrific. And they said, oh, well, Hezbollah was there. I was there. I can just tell you, one, Hezbollah was not there. We didn't see any sign of them. But two, these were Christian villages. So Hezbollah, who, you know, is Muslim, and the Christian, like Lebanon is a very diverse country. These Christian villages, there is no presence of Hezbollah because they're basically, I don't want to say enemies, but they do not get along. Hezbollah's not there. But they blamed every single war crime they carried out. They said, well, but Hezbollah's there. So this is part of a pattern that they've done for a number of years. It's not just this regime, but they've just done it, you know, on crack. It's been extreme what they've done. Everything is Hamas. You're Hamas for having this conversation with me.
Now, what you're not saying... I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. What you're not saying or speculating.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. P&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
T-Mobile is more than the best network in the game. They're now the best network in America, according to the experts at Ookla Speedtest. So baseball fans are connected to the fall classic from home to home plate with the most advanced 5G.
More towers and a signal that goes farther than ever before. T-Mobile has you covered. For baseball fans, it's better over here.
Best mobile network based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data, first half 2025. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Ah, DSW, Earth Place of the Humble Brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Is that October the 7th was somehow an inside job, or that it wasn't a real tragedy, or that it wasn't orchestrated by Hamas, right? You're not saying that. And there was, I'm guessing you've been there. You know a lot about this. I know very little. What is the feeling of non-Israelis? We know, obviously, how an Israeli person would feel about what happened on October 7th. What is the feeling amongst Palestinians? We always hear that Hamas is, they're elected. You know, they vote on these things. And Hamas was put there through an election, and that's who they had represent them. And Hamas decided to violate this ceasefire by carrying out this atrocity. I mean, there's, like you said, it's not an easy thing to kind of break down into storybook terms. Here's the good person, here's the bad person. But October 7th was carried out by Hamas and an absolute tragedy, right? And if not for October 7th, I get the impression from you that maybe Netanyahu might be in a little different place right now, a little different position right now.
I do think he would. The country was overwhelmingly, there were marches in the street all the time. It was a convenient thing. I'm not saying that this is, he was behind this or anything like that. But it, certainly he capitalized on the really horrible things that happened on October 7th. And of course they're horrible. I'm a human rights lawyer. Any human rights violation, any illegal extrajudicial killing, any of these things, there should be investigations and accountability. So, and this notion that saying don't bomb hospitals at an unprecedented rate in history makes me or any of us pro Hamas is silliness. It's to distract. Obviously, what happened that day was horrible. And also, this notion that like Hamas represents most Palestinians is just not true. There haven't been elections in a number of years.
That's the debate, right? That's the thing that we hear. I do hear people argue about that all the time. They don't actually represent these people. It's been, like you said, so long since they've had an election or had a fair election or whatever. And then I hear other people say, but they were elected. There was an election. And so they are their representatives. And they are the ones who decided to violate this ceasefire by, committing this atrocity on the 7th. So where's the truth lie?
Well, I mean, literally half the I can't remember the numbers. I want to say over half the population is like under 18. Most of these people have never voted for Hamas. I mean, they've been in power for years and there haven't been elections in years. Literally the majority of the population has not voted for Hamas, but it doesn't even matter. Even if they want to vote for Hamas, that doesn't justify unprecedented war crimes. More journalists have been killed in this war than World War I and II, the Civil War, the Vietnam War, Afghanistan, and Yugoslavia combined. I mean, what Israel is doing is unprecedented. And not a single thing that Hamas has done can justify the mass killing of civilians. Most of the people who've been killed have been women, children, and elderly, not Hamas. And so using this as a pretext, using the shitty things that Hamas did to just obliterate people. Again, you should look at the language of the leadership. If it's really about Hamas, why are they saying these things about we will annihilate, there will be no Palestinians left? This is scary discourse. This is genocidal discourse. This is why, like I said, every single, including Israeli human rights institutions, have classified this as a genocide. This is not any war. This is not like, and wars, there's always atrocities and bad things that are happening. This is an extremist regime that is using this pretext of Hamas, whatever horrible things they did or didn't do, it's not about that to this extremist regime. They are annihilating human beings.
Has Hamas been able to capitalize on this? And you talk about Netanyahu capitalizing. I know I feel weird even saying that because it obviously was a huge tragedy, but that doesn't mean that leaders don't capitalize off of tragedy. They've done it throughout history. Has Hamas's popularity gone up due to Israel's response to what happened on the 7th, or do we know?
I mean, I just think in general, Hamas has capitalized on, when, like I said, this is an open-air prison. These are not my words. These are the words of the experts that work on this, the international institutions that study this stuff, that this is an open-air prison. When you treat people so poorly, when you have what's called an International Court of Justice has said that this is an illegal occupation. They have referred to this as apartheid. When you treat a people and degrade them so much, it opens a space for extremist, leadership to take power. And the irony in all this, is that the behavior of the Netanyahu government is not only horrible for Palestinians, it's endangering Israelis. You think that eliminating every building that's above four stories, bombing every hospital, every university, these Christian religious sites and Muslim religious sites, you think you do this and then it doesn't create another generation of people that are pretty angry at you that's going to then, fight Israelis? Like, it's only endangering everyone, not just Palestinians. It's just a horrible thing.
Obviously, you're far more educated on this than we are, but let me go back in history a little bit because maybe I'm just old enough to remember this stuff. But at one point, and correct me if I'm wrong, there's the PLO, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's Arafat, right? And the PLO is there, and they recognize Israel's right to exist, right? And then there's some sort of election, fair or rigged or not, I have no idea, where the offshoot of the PLO is Hamas, right? And Hamas becomes a competitor with the PLO, and Hamas goes to war with the PLO, the PLO being the Palestinian Liberation Outfit. I don't know what the O stands for.
Organization.
But
outfit, that's good.
That is good. I like outfit.
So they go to war, and then Hamas wins some way. The PLO was secular. Hamas isn't secular. They take over, and they say that Israel does not have the right to exist. So, if you go back and looking at it, and I'm just trying to figure out, you go back and looking at it, you're thinking about Arafat and Reagan and whoever was all around then. There was like at least an idea that Israel had the right to exist with the PLO. Once Hamas wins an election and then goes to war with the PLO, then Israel does not have a right to exist, which, using your logic, then makes more people in Israel obviously angry at Hamas, and you get the speech of Israel shouldn't exist, from here to the sea, all those things, and that's how somebody like Netanyahu gets in power, and like you said, stays in power and benefits from these types of wars, right? I mean, it feels like it happens on both sides.
Yeah.
Did I get that history right? Is that fairly close?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's way complex, and I don't want to pretend to know the nuances of all the history because it has been a back and forth. It's, in many ways, on the one hand, it's really, really complicated, and there have been different players. And Hamas, it's funny because whenever I try to clarify things, and then it's like, oh, well, you're supporting Hamas or whatever. Yes, Hamas has said these things. Their charter said it. Many, many bad things. They also pulled back on that, and they have moderated their position on that. Again, this is no sort of support for them,
sure,
or frankly, any of the governments. I'm here as an international human rights lawyer. I don't have a dog on the political side of this, but I think that people try to simplify it and say, look, all these Palestinians want to eliminate Israel, that the poor Israel is in this region where every state wants to annihilate it. I don't think that's the case because they could these are very big countries with way more weapons than they probably should have that could easily do that. I don't think any Palestinian I've ever met has never said, I want, to annihilate Israel. I think that's silly. I think there are some extremists that definitely hold these positions. I'm not saying that doesn't exist, but I think, again, it's just that you have these authoritarians that capitalize on those pieces, just like you have on the other side, and Hamas capitalizing on the really horrific things that Israel's done. to be able to mobilize and get people to support them. But I don't think that, like, I don't think you ask the average Palestinian or Israeli, like, if you ask the average Israeli, do you want to obliterate all Palestinians from Earth? My guess is they're going to say no. If you ask the average Palestinian about that on Israelis, my guess is they're going to say no. You just have this, like, leadership that's just ultra problematic.
And how is the United States, I mean, where is the United States right now? Where's the United States government? Not asking about the consensus of the people, but the government. What has their response been? What have they done wrong, in your opinion? And you mentioned earlier that they're in a tough place politically, which that could be said basically since Truman. But what's happening now, and are they showing any signs of doing what you think would be the right thing, saying the right things?
No.
Or are they emboldening?
No, they're facilitating a genocide, according to the United Nations, according to international human rights institutions, according to the International Court of Justice. There is a responsibility of third states. We are literally funding a genocide. We are literally funding an illegal occupation, according to international courts. Again, the problematic thing is, you know, you go to the rest of the world. In the U.S., we're kind of in this bubble. We have this very pro-Israel stance. And again, I'm not anti-Israel. But I really find it problematic when you support illegal policies, policies that have been called apartheid, genocide, occupation, et cetera. And we're funding this stuff, and we are a rogue state in this. Like, if you look at when the United Nations votes about issues on Israel and Palestine, it's literally the whole world versus Israel and the United States, or occasionally some other kind of like authoritarian regime will kind of get, you know, just to basically like get brownie points with the U.S. supported. But it's almost exclusively every nation state on the earth versus Israel and the U.S. on this issue.
Let me ask you this. What's the U.S.'s – why is the U.S. backing Israel so hard? What's their end game there? Is it just stability in the Middle East, oil?
You tell me. I don't know. You know, I have kind of my thoughts on it. It really got to a point where – you know, for so many years, it was, you know, I have my thoughts on why. At this point, I can't understand anymore when you know, these folks, I'll just be honest. I think, you know, I met with U.S. officials on this stuff who behind the scenes are a little more like, whoa, this is bad. Even when we were visited in prison, you know, Trump mocked us. Mike Huckabee, who's the Israeli ambassador, mocked us on Twitter, mocked the flotilla, said it was kind of some selfie cruise, that there was no... you know, no aid, which is objectively false. You know, we have videos if we need to show, you know, like that's BS. And by the way, I will say one of the things that was quite frustrating is when we were taken, our ship was taken, Israeli soldiers went through the aid and began like just started eating the food that we're bringing to starving people. It was somewhat, it was just the little things where you're like, come on, you guys got food. This is right for starving people. But anyway, when we were visited by U.S. officials in prison, they were outraged. They were like, they couldn't believe, they saw it. They saw it. You could visibly see, you know, like black eyes, the bruises, the cuts and stuff that we all had. They were pretty outraged that we are, you know, Trump has this discourse of America first, but it's like, well, they just kidnapped a bunch of Americans and beat them pretty badly for days on end. Is it America first? Because why are you allowing Israel to treat American citizens like this? You know, I don't know if it's AIPAC and the engagement of AIPAC. I don't know. It's historically our relationship with Israel. I don't know.
And that's the dumbed down version, right? It's historically, this all goes back to World War II and an attempt to exterminate, you know, Jewish people, and the Western world being very concerned and sensitive to that. But like you pointed out, over the years, you know, the other countries in Europe were obviously a part of that war and were anti-fascist and anti-Nazi and thought that what happened to the Jews was a terrible thing. So that wouldn't really explain then why the United States is the only country, you know, you're saying, that's continued to give them basically blanket support no matter what all these years later.
Yeah, I mean, I do want to clarify one thing, because I think on the one hand, there's a lot of guilt of what the world failing Jews and the many others that were killed, the gypsies, the communists, the, you know, anybody who was not, you know, the
winners,
the Aryan race, but overwhelmingly, obviously overwhelmingly Jews just obliterated. And we failed them. The international community failed them, but there's still some anti-Semitism on behalf of Europeans in the U.S. after their decision. I mean, how many, instead of inviting Jews, you know, to live in Europe or to the United States, to these other spaces, they were quite racist after. Like, I think we sometimes whitewash, like, post-World War II. I think there was this guilt. I think there was, obviously, we'd an awareness of what happened was horrible. But when there was a moment to provide a home to all these displaced Jews, you saw Europe and the United States closing doors pretty darn quickly, you know? And they were like, well, let's send them to Palestine. And this was the Nakba, and they displaced hundreds of thousands of Palestinians and killed Palestinians to take this land. And a lot of that came from, frankly, U.S. racism, anti-Semitism, and European anti-Semitism. So I don't want to, like, on the one hand, I think that the U.S. and Europe is kind of good in how they responded, but they also had their own racism they were dealing with and were really crappy and shitty to Jews after the Holocaust.
Right. So then that wouldn't explain the... Maybe it would. Maybe that would explain it as well. If you're trying to dumb it down and make it as overly simplified as possible, you could say, this is what we set up. This was, you know, kind of our idea. And, you know, we told them they could have this spot over there because we didn't want all of them coming over here at the same time. So, you know, now we got to defend it. I mean, it is hard to believe, though, that would be reason that the United States would continue to support Israel the way that you're saying that they do. It to me would make more sense that the United States, almost out of instinct, would say, because they've been supportive of Israel for so long, no president wants to be the one who's seen as anti-Israel, right? I mean, that's Democrat or Republican. That's sort of been
maybe to be added. I mean, Israel has lobbyists and money.
Yes.
And connections to the U.S. government that I'm guessing Hamas doesn't have that type of money and pull.
If you go down, I was in, you know, the halls of Congress pretty recently doing some other work stuff. And if you look at the number of Israeli flags, I mean, it's kind of bizarre to be in like the Capitol and see more Israeli flags than probably U.S. flags on next to the offices of our elected representatives. That's really weird. And yes, I think that, you know, it's hard because on the one hand, there are these racist tropes about Jews using their money in these spaces that are totally racist and totally wrong. But there is AIPAC, which you can just look at the numbers on how much money they give politicians, and politicians like money. So whether it's AIPAC, whether it's the NRA, it has an impact. And AIPAC has been incredibly successful. And I do want to emphasize, and this is something that, again, the response is always like, well, oh, you're being anti-Semitic for criticizing AIPAC for giving money, or that this is a Jewish thing. And that's just wrong. AIPAC is overwhelmingly funded by Christians too, right-wing evangelical Christians. So AIPAC, though it's a pro-Israel organization, is not a Jewish organization.
And they've got their whole other different reasons for, you know, doing that.
Totally. And that's a piece of why this, the U.S., which is very Christian, you know, a lot believe that this is, you know, the return of Jesus Christ, and we must support Israel for the second coming and all this stuff. So yeah, there are like religious reasons, I think, that the United States backs this outside of money, outside of political stability or what they see as political influence in the region. There's, you know, Christian stuff.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I forget about that. And that is such a huge aspect that when the religious right, and it doesn't mean all Christians, but when specifically the religious right got as powerful as they did in politics, it's hard for people like us to, you know, and look, we're not very religious. Laszlo and I talk about that. I don't know what your religious beliefs are, Thomas, but I don't think you're overly religious. It is hard for people like us who aren't super religious to remember how many people, how many Americans believe that there's going to be a judgment day and that this starts with Israel and all these literal things. I mean, we saw it with this TikTok thing that happened a while back. So there are myriad reasons that an average American might say why they support Israel or why the United States government has continued to be so supportive of Israel, or even just, if we don't say supportive, just look the other way when things like this are going on. Not helped Americans when they're captured in this flotilla like you were in, whatever the case may be. That it's just there's so many different reasons. Yeah.
Because there are a bunch of reasons. The one other one I think that is really complex is that, you know, so much of Israel it's intertwined with, it's the Jewish state. And so this conflating criticism of a nation state, creating, you know, committing human rights violations with anti-Semitism. Nobody, I don't want to be called anti-Semitic. I've spent my life fighting against racism and discrimination. It feels really crappy hearing that. And I think it's the same for politicians or anyone else who it's like, you're scared to criticize this government because it's so easily said it's there's, you know, it's the next step is, oh, well, you're criticizing Judaism. You're anti-Jew. Like I said, saying AIPAC is bad. Yes, there are racist tropes about Jews using money that are totally wrong. But AIPAC, it's not about Judaism. It has not. It's actually treating. It's to me the irony is the anti-Semitic part is you're treating Jews as a monolith. And when you look at most, for instance, most people protesting, most students who've been punished for protesting, like pro-Palestine students, have disproportionately been Jews. So treating Jews like Israel represents the Jewish people internationally is just absurd. This is an extremist regime that is manipulating and taking advantage of that. But I do think that U.S. politicians or people who work in human rights or anything, journalists, like nobody wants to be accused of being a racist. So it's like you freeze up and kind of let this extremist regime. I mean, I've talked to politicians who are like, you know, I think this is horrible, but I can't. This is like, this is the third rail. If I speak out on this, like, it's like political suicide because it's going to be framed as like, you're an anti-Semite.
Yeah.
And so you have these politicians who are like, I don't think bombing schools is okay, but they're too scared to say something.
Yeah. So I say it's one of those rare issues that both parties have been afraid to. No one wants to deal with it. No one wants to talk about it. No one wants to make it their issue.
Totally.
And I mean,
and even in my human rights world, it's the same. I've seen lawyers who are like, I'm scared. I could lose my job. Academics who are like, I can't take a position on this issue because, you know, the Harvard Corporation may step in and say that I should be, you know, dismissed. And that's not a good space because, again, it has nothing to do with Judaism.
Yeah.
It has to do with a really repressive government that represses its own people, too.
Now, how do we get to a place where we had this attack on October 7th, which, you know, it really can't be overstated if you know nothing about it, how evil and horrible it was. You have this attack, and then the response by a lot of, and I'm not saying it was a majority or anywhere close, but a response by a lot of young Americans, especially on college campuses, was this... was a very anti-Israel, and I'm not going to call them anti-Semites because, you know, we just had this discussion. Maybe some of them are, maybe some of them aren't. But they were openly saying that they don't think Israel should exist, and they were openly protesting and basically calling for the eradication of Israel. How do we always get to this, you know, you're either on this side where it's like you get rid of Israel completely, or on this side where you support them completely. How do we get to a place where so many college kids were saying get rid of Israel when for so many years the United States has been so supportive, as we've already been over? Is it because of that this was like what you would call an overcorrection? Or maybe you didn't think it was an overcorrection. I guess I don't know your opinion.
No, well, so I do think, one, there needs to be a recognition that there is anti-Semitism. Like, that very much exists. There's also a whole lot of racism against Muslims, and all these things need to be addressed. So I do think there are currents of that. I see it now in protests, and I'm like, this is really problematic. And what I do say is, whenever I've seen anything problematic, people have instantly been like, no, we're not having that here, which I do appreciate. But I will say, I teach at Columbia now. Columbia has been the epicenter of all these, you know, pro-Palestine, mm-hmm. I don't even say pro-Palestine, anti-genocide protests. And I will say that the coverage has been wildly off.
Okay.
Most of the students that I've seen, disproportionately, it's been Jewish students, Jewish Voice for Peace, organizing these protests. I think there's an awareness of the optics and the manipulation of their Judaism and anti-Semitism to push back and silence people. So my experience, which, you know, this is anecdotal, but I am kind of in the space of the, you know, probably the campus that's been focused on most, I have not seen that. And you see elements of it. There's individuals, but I think that the press has capitalized on that and tried to say, look at this anti-Semitism. Look, they're calling for the destruction of Israel. That's not what I've been seeing at all. And when I have seen that stuff, protesters are like, no. I've also seen, you know, And I want to say that I think there have been protesters that have done that. I've also seen people that were literally like pro-Israel protesters show up and do the Nazi salute, where this woman was outed for doing that to try to make the protesters look bad. So I think that's sexy and sensational. And so people focus on that and they focus on the divisions. But most people are literally just saying, hey, I just saw a bunch of babies get exploded. Something's wrong here. Like, can we not just agree that, like, whatever with politics, blowing up babies is never okay, even if there's Hamas in the building, which most institutions say they're not. You can't. Imagine, like, whatever, you're in Leawood or something, going to REI, and there's an, I don't know, a terrorist or, you know, someone who's shooting there. You can't go in and blow up the entire REI. Like, that's against the law, even if there's a big bad person in there. And that's how they've approached this, which has been decimate, annihilate everyone, disproportionately children, women, and elderly. And so the protests I've seen have overwhelmingly said, let's not blow up grannies and children.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. What was, in your mind, and this is just an opinion again, I'm asking you your opinion, but not that you have any insight, but when Hamas did what they did, right? You know, landing, taking hostages, going to the concert, whatever all happened, what was their end game there, and what did they think was going to happen? I'm really curious about that. You know how, like, you've got, this is Netanyahu for the second time. Like, it's not, he's not a new guy here.
Right.
You had Netanyahu, then you had Ariel Sharon, who was, like, the greatest general in Israeli history or whatever, who went to war and said, we're not only going to win this war, we're going to take more land. And then you went back to Netanyahu, so you do this thing, like, what do you think's going to happen when it's, you know, the Netanyahu Ariel Sharon regime since what, 93, basically?
And you had a ceasefire that was, you
know. Right, so you know how these guys act. Like, I'm not, I'm not a big, you know, Israel historian, but I know those names and I know what they did.
Yeah, they're certainly not going to respond well. They have been pretty heavy-handed. Look, I can speculate. I this is a speculation. I think it's a mixture of, you know, most people in Gaza don't have jobs. They don't have, they live in starvation. The conditions in Gaza are horrific. And I think a mixture of desperation that folks got over this wall that they've been trapped in, literally trapped in for years. And I think part of it's in the moment, like, holy shit, like I'm out of what is seen as a prison. And I think, so some of it was like emotional reactions. But I do think some of this is like the world doesn't get how bad it is. I mean, international institutions do. Every single year, the UN condemns what Israel has done in Gaza and the West Bank as well. And I think there's this desperation and we need people to pay attention to us. If you look at like Black Lives Matter, when it, you know, it basically came out of Missouri, Ferguson. And I've been to Ferguson. My dad grew up in the town next to Ferguson. I grew up off Troost. I know what firsthand I've seen the disparities between Black Kansas City and White Kansas City, and nobody pays attention. And when Ferguson happened, it wasn't just Mike Brown was shot. It's people rioted, people burnt buildings. And guess what? The whole country looked at them and were like, huh, something's going on. Not that I'm justifying riots, not that I'm justifying all this stuff, but it got people to pay attention. And I do think part of this is like, no, we're not even on the radar, people. We need people to pay attention because we are so desperate. We are melting into the ground because we are starving. And so I think part of it, again, I'm speculating, is like, what else do we do? We've tried everything. Literally, the United Nations, people have done UN resolutions. They've done all the things that you're supposed to do. Even now, I mean, I'll be honest, part of me going on this flotilla is, we've done all this. We've followed the rules. We've done the things you're supposed to do. The International Court of Justice has said that the occupation of Gaza is illegal and Israel must leave immediately. And any country that supports it must facilitate their removal or from the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. The International Criminal Court has said that he has likely committed war crimes and has an arrest warrant, Netanyahu. The UN has said that this is a genocide. Like, all the things that you're supposed to do, me as a human rights lawyer, we've done. The international community has done, and it hasn't worked. And so I jumped on a ship because I'm like, what the fuck else do we do? The world is failing.
Right, but,
and
but,
I think there's probably some of that with Hamas, where it's like all the legal avenues have been sought. And the international community, other than the U.S. principally, has said this is wrong, but it hasn't worked. And so I think this desperation of like, fuck it, what else? We have nothing else to lose.
But in, so your, just, in like, that speculation, attention. I'm curious, because I get what you're saying, but in that speculation, do you think that Hamas was hopeful or is happy that Israel is responding the way they are, even though it's costing so many people their lives?
You know, again, I'm one, I want to emphasize, because I'm not justifying anything they did. Yeah, and I'm not justifying what they did. I'm just like guessing why something that was inevitably going to lead to, you know, obliteration or something, a pretty heavy-handed response. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they're happy. I know what I can say is that I was in touch with people in Gaza quite a bit on the ship, mostly doctors, but and some journalists and just everyday people who were like, who basically were like, this is horrific. This is the worst thing we've ever experienced. But they also said, do you know what it's like to be invisible for so many years? And people are seeing us for the first time. People know I exist. And that's why I can get through another 2 months of bombing, because at least I know I'm on their radar. And so right. I don't know if Hamas feels the same, if they're like, this has been a good thing or a bad thing. I mean, certainly it's been a horrific thing, but maybe they're like, well, this is, put it on the radar. I can only guess.
That's, I mean, it's like, if you go back and look at Osama bin Laden and what his stated goals were for September 11th, and you look at it with the clarity of however many years it's been, 24 years now, you go, oh, shit, you know? And it's not like there weren't people at the time who were saying, hey, don't do the things that he wanted us to do. There were those people, but for the most part, you had a very visceral reaction, because we were fucking pissed, right? We were mad. People died. Our countrymen died, and we wanted revenge. That's a natural instinct. And then here we look at it all these years later, and we go, well, shit, I think we did some of those things that he was hoping we would do. I think that we live in a lot more fear now than we did before that day. And so he at least accomplished some of the things he wanted to accomplish. Now, you're saying that with Hamas, maybe it wasn't as planned out as the media would have us believe, or that it's more of just a visceral, hey, I got over this fucking wall, and now I want to go murder anyone who is part of my enemy, who put me behind that wall. So it's not as clear what my stated goals are, other than in this moment, I'm fucking angry, and I'm going to fucking take it out on you. That's kind of what I'm getting from you.
I think it's a spectrum. This thing is, I think it's complex. I think that there's people that have horrific, like, anti-Semitic views that are part of Hamas. I think there's others that are like, this is the only like political avenue that we have here, and it's the only one who stood up for us. And so you have people that are like in a desperate situation where like it's literally the only political, there are not elections, so they're like, this is the avenue. There's others that are like, holy shit, I'm a fucking teenager who hasn't worked a job and doesn't have enough food to feed my family, and I'm out. Whoa, you know, like, I think it's ultra complex, and I think that that's why I don't think it's like this, like, we have this mission of pulling this off and this will then trigger all these things. But I do think that there's like myriad reasons, and you know, but it's not as like, I think we treat Palestinians as a monolith just like we treat Jews as a monolith. Like, all Jews support you know, Netanyahu, or all Palestinians support Hamas. And I just think it's really complex. But what is not complex is that there is an illegal occupation, and that the war crimes that are carried out are just not even in the same stratosphere. So obviously what Hamas did, horrific, like terrible, terrible, but not even like, if you look at the simple numbers, it's just not even the same strategy. If you look in the numbers compared to other wars, more aid workers killed in this war than any other war ever combined in the last century, more journalists, more doctors. I mean, it's like, there's something different happening. This is not Ukraine, which is really, really bad too. This is not what's happening in Congo or Sudan. This is unprecedented. In terms of numbers, unprecedented. And if we do this and normalize this, we're going to see horrific authoritarians all over the world behaving like this, because international law is deteriorating. Like, every international institution has stepped in and said, whoa, whoa, this is bad. This is like too much. There are rules in war, and you've gone way past them. And Netanyahu basically said, so what? What are you going to do? And it just invites the next authoritarian in whatever insert country to behave like a megalomaniac and just annihilate people. It's horrific.
You know, you brought up two good points, and one that I really don't have any answer to, but I've always been curious. You said if Hamas and its associates, be it Iran or whatever, wanted to get rid of Israel, they could. You made that statement. They have their big countries with big armies. If they wanted to get rid of them, they could. My first question is, then why don't they? after all these years? And then my second question to that is, clearly Israel could just take over the West Bank and Gaza if they wanted to. I mean, it's obvious. I mean, if they wanted to go out and just kill everyone, it's clear they could. Why don't either of these things ever happen? It just becomes like these massive atrocities, and we talk about it and talk about it, then there's a ceasefire, and then we go back to it. It seems really strange to me that somebody's not just said, even if they're totally wrong, fuck all this, I'm ending it now. I know I guess they tried to do that when they took in the Yom Kippur War, when they tried to take more land, but they haven't really done that, right?
I don't think they could get, so this goes back to what you mentioned earlier. I think, you know, I think many people have problematic views, but I don't think most Israelis want to eliminate Palestinians from Earth. I don't think most Palestinians or Iranians or Syrians or whoever want to eliminate all Israelis from Earth. So I think you have people, and then you have big bad governments, and a lot of shitty people gravitate toward governments. Not everybody, but you have these really problematic leaders. I don't think that, for instance, I'll kind of respond to your second question first. I don't think Netanyahu could literally get away with just like carpet bombing. I mean, they basically have, but just literally carrying out such a black and white ethnic cleansing without a response from the international community or his own people. I think he's doing it in a way. I think he's done the frog in water. I don't know if you know this like analogy that I always bring up with my students, and they're like, whatever, stop. Okay, I get it. But you put a frog in boiling water, it jumps out. Put a frog in water that, in tepid water, and turn up the heat, and slowly, slowly, you know, they'll boil to death. And I think what's happened in Gaza
goes back to what you're talking about, normalizing something. If we continue to normalize, and you mentioned Ukraine, saying it's not as bad in Ukraine, and you look at how bad things are in Ukraine, it does make me kind of wonder. You think back to these old wars where they used to talk about these armies and these generals having some sort of honor, and we only fight one another. And then, you know, things started to turn into, somebody came up with the idea of like total war. And it's like, what if we took some civilians out with us and burned down these entire cities? And are we headed in a direction where this is what war looks like? And the international community is just like, yeah, this is what war looks like. Because I do think that the simple answer to why these countries don't destroy one another is that there would be a response from somebody else. If Iran destroys Israel, they got to worry about us and others coming for them after that. And
their own people. I really do want to emphasize, I don't think people want it. Like, I think most people on the planet are really good. We're flawed, but we're good. And I don't think that most Iranians want to kill all Israelis. I just don't believe that. I don't think most Israelis want to kill all Palestinians. I don't believe that. You know, so I think part of it is there's accountability internationally, but to their own people. Like, people are not going to respond well to mass genocide, black and white genocide. I think what we've seen with what's going on in Palestine is it's been, I mean, there's been big moments, but it's just like gotten worse and worse. And it's like, how many times did Biden say, this is my red line? And then Netanyahu then crossed the red line, and he's like, okay, cool, I can keep crossing this. And it just got worse and worse. And now you look back 2 years later, and you're like, you see the images of Gaza, and you're like, this looks like Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. You know what I mean? Like, how did we get here? And it wasn't just like in one night, they just kind of like took carpet bombed the whole area, which is quite small. They've done it gradually. And I think we now are like, I think historians are going to look back and be like, holy shit. Because again, the stats show what's happening is unprecedented, just unprecedented. But it was like, it's been gradual enough that I think he's been able to get his cake and eat it too. He's gotten away with a lot of this stuff without the mega response if he had just gone and carpet bombed everybody at the same time.
I wish you were passionate about something, Thomas. That's the one thing. I've known you a long time. I can tell when you're it's just work for you, and you hate doing it. It's too bad there's no passion.
Clock in and clock out, and you know.
Yeah.
I mean, this sounds super cliche, but it's like, it's hard to see this stuff. I mean, the first time I went to Israel, they were shooting machine guns at children, and I was filming them, and they shot me with a rubber bullet to stop me from shooting. I've seen this stuff first. It's hard to see it firsthand and come back and be like, this is okay. You know what I mean? I probably am excessively passionate.
But it's also got to be really hard to see people, to encounter people who go, I'm an expert because I followed this on Twitter. I go through all the hashtags and I see it. I've seen what's happening at Columbia on Twitter, and I've seen what people are saying on Twitter. And I've known you for a long time. You're someone who does go to these places. You're there in person. Obviously, you've studied these things. that's got to be extremely frustrating. It's frustrating to me just because as an American citizen, I get so tired of everybody being an expert about everything. It's like, Jesus Christ, right. I don't want to talk to you. I don't know how you suddenly... I've never heard you talk about this once before in your life, and now suddenly you're an expert, you know? And I'm sure that's an instinct that's human nature, but...
Well, yeah, we all do it. You know, this is... And you know what's unique about, I feel like, Israel and Palestine is... And I think that, like, a lot of, like, the students you mentioned don't get this. And I think maybe it's because they're young. But there are the generations of trauma of the Holocaust, and not just the Holocaust. I mean, how many years of anti-Semitism and persecution have Jews endured? And right. So I understand that, like, a lot of people's natural reaction is to side with them. I feel that penchant because, like, fucking A, they've been mistreated over and over and over. And so I think you need to, like, recognize generations of trauma, recognize the horrific history of anti-Semitism, and give some people a little leeway to, like, have those feelings, but then nicely point out, like, look, this isn't about my, you know, Uncle Bob on social media. Let's look at what the experts say. And this is, I mean, maybe I sound so boring, but it's like, look at what the people who know this stuff, who this is their careers, the United Nations, Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, you know, like, unilaterally, like, it's, there's consensus. This is a genocide.
Well, I mean, I sided with Israel after October 7th. I was pissed and you know, pissed for them. Like, I understood. I shouldn't say I understood, but we can try and sympathize and empathize with that feeling of, you know, what it must be like to have that happen and to have that many people totally missing, kidnapped, dead, murdered in such horrible ways. I was pissed and I thought, you know, I'm not like a huge Netanyahu fan. I'm an idiot. But I'm guessing if I was Israeli, based on who I am here as an American, he's probably not the guy I would vote for. But I also thought, I know what it feels like to have the guy in charge that you didn't vote for when something like this happens. And you're like, yeah, well, I'm going to give him a little leeway right now because this is fucked up. And that's how I felt.
Sure.
But you can get to a point where you do start to burn that goodwill. And I mean, look, the United States did it in a lot of ways over the last 25 years. And Israel, I think you're starting to see Israel do some of that now. And I wonder what the percentage of people in Israel would be if you had accurate polls. Maybe there are some. I don't know. I'm an idiot. But how they feel about this response, or if they are being kind of sheltered from it, the same way we would be as Americans if this were happening, that they'd try and keep the worst of it from making headline news.
Totally. I mean, one, I want to say, like, hat goes off to you because – I think a lot of people don't. People double down, triple down, quadruple down. And I think it's like, we all have that tendency. I have that tendency. And I try to push back on that and be like, am I wrong? Was I wrong about this? I am wrong a lot. You know what I mean? Like, this is human nature. We're wrong. And the fact that you can be like, I was sympathetic. I fully agreed or supported and understood where they came from. And then you can also step back and be like, okay, well, maybe this is too far. And I think you bringing up what the U.S. did is a perfect example. Like, after 9/11, it was like the whole world was with us. And then eventually we just burnt bridge after bridge after bridge, tortured people, launched illegal wars, carried out illegal drone strikes, did all these things where, like, we lost a lot of credibility. And now, you know, 20 years later, even Trump runs on, like, I was a crows to the war. Like, there were no weapons of mass destruction.
Right,
and
kind
of
crazy. Yeah.
We're seeing, you know, to think of, like, a conservative Republican taking that position. But I think that this is, I mean, I very, very strongly believe that the history books will, like, people are going to look back at this and be like, this is horrific. And I think this is a process getting there. And again, this is why I'm trying to say, like, this isn't about, like, my opinion. Look at their language. Look at the experts who do this, who talk about it. And people have changed their mind. And everybody, or not everybody, a lot of the world was with Israel on October 7th and 8th and 9th and 10th. And now if you look at the response internationally, people have been horrified. You can't watch TikTok videos and not feel something.
I don't think I have to change my mind, though. I don't even think I have to say that I changed my mind or that I was wrong. Not that it's because I'm
right. I think everybody was kind of like that.
Yeah.
And now we're like, yo,
what's happening?
What are you doing now?
What's
like,
happening?
Even me, who was like, well, quit hiding people in hospitals and they won't get blown up.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, well, I don't think they're hiding them in every hospital. Like,
right.
It happens once. I'm like, get the people out of the hospitals, or that's your fault. But by the end of it, you're like, boy.
You keep saying
I'm not
this.
Sure they're hiding at all the daycare centers. They can't be doing that.
Yeah. And that's exactly
and
what he said.
Are,
that's
you
good
just can't
Will
blow
Beamer.
Up a whole daycare center.
Right.
You know, it's, but you're right. You know, I think you're right. And I think you guys are standing where a lot of, even myself, you know, like I didn't come, I wasn't like on October 7th, like, you know, fuck Israel. I was like, oh my God, this is horrible. These things happen. But then as these war crimes started happening on such an unprecedented scale, it's like, okay, we need to really look into this. And now nothing that Hamas did on October 7th can justify the mass slaughter of anyone for that matter, but children, women, and elderly people who are just civilians.
Yeah.
But kids, babies.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Yeah. I think you can be very pro-Israel and also pro-human rights, you know, at the same time and say, well, if human rights are being violated, I'm opposed to it by either side. And I'm not trying to other side this. They already did that, you know. It's been going on for years. And this particular conflict started October 7th. So, you know, you really don't have to do the other side or the whataboutisms. It's I don't understand why it has to be you're either pro-Israel or anti-Israel.
I know. And it's really been such a disservice for those of us who work on these issues where it's like that it's politicized. It's literally just saying don't bomb daycares. You know, that's kind of fucked up.
Right.
Say we will annihilate a people. But it's also saying, you know, Hamas should not brutally kill people at a fucking concert.
Exactly.
And others, you know what
exactly.
I mean? And it's not
that
know?
Difficult. It's not that overly nuanced to say I'm pro-Israel. I don't know that I love the way Netanyahu is handling his role as a leader or his response to October 7th. How is that difficult to understand? It's no different than saying I'm a proud American when there's a president in office that you didn't vote for, but you're still a proud American, right?
Totally. 100%, dude. 100%. We're not there, though, in this conversation, unfortunately.
A totally uneducated feel about this and just a pragmatic one. And we think, why does the U.S. or people, you know, and obviously a lot of people in the U.S. are, you know, anti-Israel this time around. But I've always felt like we've sided with them because we recognize them as us. If you look at, you know, even the PLO and Arafat at that time and Hamas now, you know, it's machine guns and jeeps and scarves tied around their necks and black hats, right? And it's very easy for us to see that and then look to the other side and see English speaking, three-piece suit, you know, actors, entertainers, elections, Levi's. It looks like us. And when we look, we go, oh, well, that's my side over there. I'm clear the side with cable TV and a tie on during debates is the one that I certainly recognize as closer to me than this other one that they keep showing on TV doing, you know, exercises on jungle gyms and driving through the streets with, you know, on the back of Jeeps with machine guns shooting in the air, right?
I love that you.
I mean, to me, it's just easy.
You're totally, totally, totally right. I mean, one, most Israelis are not from the region. They were European Jews. I mean, I'm saying like in recent history, they look like us. They're going to like watch indie rock bands at coffee shops in Tel Aviv.
Right.
That feels like us. And there's awareness of this. Even on our boat, when we thought we would get attacked by Israel, and we were like, who's the most vulnerable? And we literally were like, people with beards, brown people with beards, they're going to shoot them first. That's why I was in the front. They were like, you have a sparkly white face.
You can't,
that hopefully protects you.
You can't grow a beard, you know? Can you? I can't imagine.
And that's the other thing is I still have this preteen body and I'm waiting for puberty to kick in. And you're right. I mean, I think it looks different. I mean, I remember years ago when I was a student at Harvard, a friend of mine was Palestinian. He gave me a scarf that he brought back. I put it on, not even in any sort of political way. It was just like a gift. And I was like, put it on right after. He was like, oh, this is a pretty, like, I saw it as like, I don't know, like, a textile, something pretty. So he gave it to me. I put it on right after someone came up and called me a terrorist. And I was like, the fact that you associate this with terror, I mean, this is what we see. We see these images of these people that we, you know, like the media tells us they're big, bad terrorists.
Yeah.
These are, you know, Palestinians who have no links at all to like ISIS or Al Qaeda, but we just kind of lump them all together as big, bad terrorists. And then you see the indie rock, you know, guitarist sipping his like lavender tea latte, you know, we kind of identify with those.
That's a worldview that we understand, recognize,
and
accept.
If Hamas comes out and gives some sort of speech about something, we see it. And then Netanyahu comes out afterwards. There's a podium, a flag, a blue tie on, and he, you know, speaks perfect English. You're like, well, fuck. I guess I ride with that guy. Like, I don't know anything else.
Yeah, I think you are totally right on. And I don't even think it's, like, intentional. I don't think it's, like...
No, it's been going on forever.
It's human nature, you know?
It's human nature, exactly.
I think it's just we see it that way, and that's the way our mind clicks. Like, you know, oh, I can clearly see what side I'm on.
It made it difficult in World War I for the British, and probably the Germans too, but the British have talked about how difficult it was to kind of try and find a way to stereotype the Germans, because once they get over there and they're fighting in the trenches together and they start talking and they take them hostage, prisoner, whatever, they're like, oh, you look like me. Oh, right. We like the same things. And same in World War II for the United States. It was very easy for them to draw up these caricatures of what people in the South Pacific look like. But when it came to the Germans, you know, it's a little more difficult because, oh, well, they look like us. That's always been a go-to, is if they look different, you start there. You know, and like you said, Lazo, now you look different, you dress different, you talk different,
right.
You're having different everything, and you go, okay, well, who's the one that's having the indie rock concert? That's mine.
I mean, you can picture, something... I remember, you can see it at the White House, you know, there's been plenty of people, but in my head, you go over and over again, you see Yasser Arafat walk up, and, you know, Netanyahu walk up, and you're like, well, fuck, the Netanyahu guy looks like my president. Like I might have voted for him if I listened to him long enough.
Yeah.
And so I do think part of it's racism, and part of it's just kind of human nature. And I can give you a very personal example of this, where torture in Israel is really bad. And just putting aside Gaza, like in the West Bank, the number of Palestinians they've illegally detained, that they've held for years without any sort of legal process. I mean, total violations of due process. And the number of torture allegations. And if you look at the number, I want to say that of the, like, thousands, only four, there's been zero indictments and four investigations, 1,000. I mean, like, the numbers are just really shocking. Like, the kind of stuff you see in, like, Big Bad Dictator Third World, you know, like the movie, the guy, the big bad guy that's, like, you know, twirling his mustache because he's just so repressive. Those kinds of numbers. That doesn't matter to U.S. politicians. The number, like, U.S. politicians want to meet with me, you know, and I'm really, and honestly, and the press, and I've been hesitant to talk to the press. You guys are my friends, so I'm like, yeah, I'll chat with you guys. But I've struggled with, like, how much I want to tell my story, because I'm like, dudes, it's so much fucking worse for Palestinians. But I also recognize that, like, all these people who didn't get it, who can see the stats, who are like, no, I'm still going to look the other way. When they see it happen to me, I look like them. I look like these politicians, even like conservative ones who've been, I mean, a lot reached out to get me out of prison because they were like, an American citizen is getting tortured. So, like, Republicans who probably even more pro-Israel than Democrats, folks who I wouldn't expect, all were like, whoa, one of our own is getting tortured. This is bad.
Yeah.
It highlights, like, whether either through racism or, you know, just kind of human nature, identify with those that look like us. And so they cared a lot more about me than the Palestinians who are getting metal rods shoved up their ass until they die.
Yeah. And there's the irony there, too, is that this gets attention. You know, what happened to you gets attention, just like what we were talking about earlier, you know, trying to get attention to something, even if it hurts, even if it and in your case, you know, it sounds like it did literally hurt. But it does bring attention to it. We're sitting here talking to you about it right now. And again, I go back to, if you talk about the torture that goes on, the idea of carpet bombing Gaza, all these things that we know, you know, as a person who's traveled the world, that most people tend to be good and that they care about the same things that we care about their families, right? They care about their kids, their parents, their siblings, their friends. They're generally good people. And so we know just from common sense that the majority of people, the Israeli population, would not be the ones to push the button to say, to give the okay to these types of, you know, let's just call them atrocities. Same with the Palestinians, that they would not, the majority of them would not say, this is what you should do, is go grab those people at a concert and slit their throats. in front of their families. That's not what they would want. It's not what people want.
Totally.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
T-Mobile is more than the best network in the game. They're now the best network in America, according to the experts at Ookla Speedtest. So baseball fans are connected to the Fall Classic from home to home plate with the most advanced 5G, more towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever before. T-Mobile has you covered. For baseball fans, it's better over here.
Best mobile network based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence data, first half 2025. See details at T-Mobile.com.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You know, our mutual friend who was a DJ with you guys years ago, Travis, went to Israel and Palestine with me a number of years ago. And he very much, you know, I think most Americans have been historically pro-Israel. And was I remember how much it was an impactful trip for him. And he's somebody who's not impacted by anything. He just wants to, like, play pranks and listen to punk music. You know, he's not
like, leave and he pornos was like, sitting one, around.
Yeah. But seeing just the outright racism by the IDF, just openly calling, you know, Palestinians, not letting them pass because they're Palestinians, calling them animals. Like, he was blown away by that, but also blown away by the people we met. And we spent more time in Palestine than Israel, just because we were visiting a friend. And he was like, all these Palestinians were like, what are you talking? Like, we're Semitic too. We're literally sisters and brothers. Like, we are of the same race. Like, we don't want Israel gone. And I think it really, like, just spending a few days there changed his worldview completely in terms of how much he's like, oh, they want to blow up Israel. This is what I think is happening. And then he got there and everyone was like, what are you talking about? We want to blow up Israel. They're neighbors. They're literally ethnically like us. We've been here for fucking millennia. We're sisters and brothers. And I think he was really blown away by exactly what you're saying. Most people just want to, like, take care of their kids, go play soccer, watch Messi, maybe listen to some bad music, well, listen to the new Taylor Swift record. And, you know,
right.
Most people don't want that.
Right.
We're just everybody's normal. And then right. You just have lunatics. Like,
are we still, you know, are we still at the point where we're just fighting about really that piece of land that Israel thinks is theirs because, you know, they were there and then driven from it years ago and then given it back. And the Palestinians are like, no, we've lived here forever. Israel thinks it's, you know, it's theirs. It's in the Bible. It's written. It's supposed to be ours. And the Palestinians are like, yo, we've lived here forever. This is where our families live. This is where we farm. This is where we do everything. This is ours. And it's been ours for hundreds of years. And if that's the case, You'd think they could work out, well, let's split it, but it's been happening since 1936, and nobody's been able to split anything. So I guess there is no end game here until someone says, okay, we give up, you can have this. And that doesn't seem like it's going to happen.
I mean, I will say that Palestine, and again, there's been different leadership, but has agreed to the 1967 borders. And I won't bore you with all the history stuff. But basically, like, has agreed, we'll take our land, you get yours, and that's it. But Israel's not agreed to it. Like, I don't want to make it this simple, because I think it is really complex, and it's not like it's going to solve it overnight. But you have to at least start with, like, Israel's illegally occupied. They are in the West, like, they control where people can go. A friend of mine who lives there, he wasn't able to go across the street to see his grandma. He would literally have to go hours up north and take a different route because Israel's decided, we control this street. And this is in the West Bank. This is what is internationally seen as Palestinian territory. So you've got to at least start with leaving. You can't illegally occupy for decades these places. If you do that, I just don't know how you get a solution if that's the case. So I think we need to start with that and then build from there. But if that's the foundation that it's starting on, you're not going to win. You can't. They're illegally occupying. Everyone who works on these matters has said it. So you've got to start with that. Will that solve it overnight? No way.
But no one here wants to be the first politician, like we said, to come out and say, hey, you know what? I think Israel needs to back off. No one wants to make that their campaign message, you know?
No, totally. And the irony is it's only endangering more Israelis.
We're pretending like all politicians actually care. There's plenty of politicians who only care about themselves. Like you said, it attracts a lot of power-hungry, vapid sociopaths. But it's still just not good for them politically. So
no, it's a nightmare for them. It's the third rail, as one politician had mentioned.
Right, right. Well, Thomas, we're taking up a lot of your time.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man.
We didn't even talk about...
Yeah, sorry to bore your listeners. They want to hear about, like, you know, some rad record or, you know, they don't want to hear about some aging musician taking a boat to Gaza.
You'd be surprised. Our listeners are not very smart, like us, and so they love hearing these dumb conversations where they can learn something, just like Laszlo and myself hopefully learned something. We appreciate you taking the time, man. Be safe. Quit going over there and hanging out with Greta Thunberg. Or actually, you know what? Next time, get on the boat with Greta Thunberg, because it was like, she sort of did it first. She sort of made the headlines first, and then you did it second, you know? And then we had to worry about him.
I know. She made it worse for me. She pissed them off, and they were all riled up, and then we show up, and they're like, you know. So I'm a little mad at Greta right now.
Yeah, it is a little bit her fault. We didn't even talk about that. Thomas.
She's so selfish.
What do you want people to do? You want them to go to a website? You want them to give people money? Do you send people aid? Like, what do you wish people would do?
I don't know. I wish, often these times, I'm always like, oh, here's a simple solution. And this one's complex because I think it's so geopolitical. I would push representatives to, you know, have some sort of peace deal that's actually, like, it's already been violated a bunch. It's not going to last unless there's an end to the occupation and unless there's accountability for any war crimes that both sides have committed. And so I guess I would push politicians, you know, your elected representatives, take advantage. You know, like the numbers that reached out to me because of what happened to me, they've listened and say, look, this American was just tortured. I think this is really problematic. I think we need to, you know, stop funding this if they continue to carry out war crimes or, you know, kidnap and torture American citizens.
They didn't stick something up your dick hole, did they? Because you said something about that. Or maybe I just imagined that you said torture. I know that you said you got tortured. Did they do that to you?
No. Okay. It was mostly like stress positions and kicks. And
what is a stress position? You keep saying that. Like yoga?
Like tied up, like hog tied?
Yeah. What is it? Bikram yoga? I mean, in fairness, that is pretty fucking stressful.
That does feel like a stress position.
No, just like keeping you in like awkward kneeling positions for hours and then like while you're shackled and stuff like that. Stuff that like, you know, you do for a couple minutes, it's not a big deal. After several hours, like the guy in front of me kept passing out and then they'd kick the crap out of him because he couldn't
like holding
stay
the buckets of water to your side and those types of things.
I'm more like Trump. I like my activists who don't get caught.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you got caught.
Good job getting caught.
How about that? Why aren't we talking to the guy who did get eight over
right,
there?
There's some guy over there doing good work now. Yeah. You're getting caught in a little boat. Congratulations.
I'm a loser is the issue. Yeah. You know, you ask where to donate. There's an Israeli human rights organization called B'Tselem. They do really, really good work, and they're Israeli, so you know it's hard to say that they're anti-Semitic. They're based
like that.
In Israel.
There you go.
And they do really, really powerful work and document these abuses, including what's happened to us, which again, in the grand scheme of things, tiny compared to most Palestinians.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Thomas, thank you, Thomas. I appreciate it, man.
Thanks for your time, man.
Thanks. Great catching up with you guys.
Yeah.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
T-Mobile is more than the best network in the game. They're now the best network in America, according to the experts at Ookla Speedtest. So baseball fans are connected to the Fall Classic from home to home plate with the most advanced 5G, more towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever before. T-Mobile has you covered. For baseball fans, it's better over here.
Best mobile network based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence data, first half 2025. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Once upon an office so dreary, Wendy's HR presentation made everyone weary.
Was it a bore?
A snore. Could have used more charm, for sure.
That's it?
Wendy opened Canva, looking ecstatic. She began to work her magic.
Docs, prints, presentations galore. All in one design. Not dull anymore.
The next day, Wendy wowed the crowd. They clapped loud.
I feel so proud.
Now, imagine what your dreams can become when you put imagination to work at canva.com.